Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Before we get started here, I got to tell you real quick about the Right Stuff Holiday Sale, which is happening right now, rightstuffanime.com. It is world famous. They have over 2,500 items on sale right now. New items added every single day, up to 95% off anime manga figures. They've got manga bundles. They've got Blu-rays. You need it. They've got it. It's cheap. It's the holidays. Go get your Christmas shopping done at Right Stuff. Welcome, Mancast. I'm Zach Barachi. Jacob's here.
Hey, everybody.
You listening to this MP3 on your phone, which more than likely is how you're hearing this show. Right now is the first time we're taping the show with a video component where you can see Jacob and we can see our smiling faces. This is the way our live shows will be now. There will be a video version of this live and available on the site. I'm just going to throw the video up on YouTube, so people can, and you know, we'll add segments and do all the things that people do on video podcasts on AnCast now. So,
we need props. We need prop comedy immediately.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, what we need is prop comedy, scary video games to react to, and what else do we need? We need to do like a Let's Play of a Zelda game.
Right, well, scary video games to react to, prop comedy, and
caustic reviews.
Well, I was trying to think of something more visual, but like, we need a cute animal to put on screen.
Yeah, well, we got a couple of
those. We've got a couple of those.
We got a few of those. Yeah, Loot Crate unboxing, more likely than you think.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it is just a normal show. We were going to talk this week, and I've been promising this for quite some time. We were going to talk about Gankutsuo, the Count of Monte Cristo. Mm-hmm. That has been put off one more time until next week. Now, to be fair, I had not yet finished watching it. Our guest for that episode, Lindsay, had not yet finished watching it. Mm-hmm. So we needed a little bit more time. But that episode will tape next Monday at sometime in the late afternoon. We're not doing that one live. And then that show will be out next Tuesday just to make up for all the delays. Because this week I was like, oh, we saw the new Makoto Shinkai film, and we want to talk about that this week, so we're going to do Gankutsuo next time. This is, like, delay number four, and I actually got a bunch of, like,
riots.
Please
riots in the streets.
Stop delaying the Gankutsuo podcast. And I felt bad, but man, I wanted to talk about this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, this past Monday, we went to see, or I think it was Monday. It was Saturday. We went to see a screening of Your Name, Makoto Shinkai's gigantic smash hit that has done like 200 million in Japan. Yeah, totally.
And it like more millions in 40 million in China first weekend, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like the fifth or sixth highest grossing animated film in Japan ever. In Japan already. It's
animated film ever in Japan, I think.
It's not anime.
It's real close.
No, it's not. It's like down there. Yeah, it's because there's like Frozen, Spirited Away.
Oh, I meant anime.
Like the animated film charts don't really do that, but anime specifically, it's still not number two. I don't think it's number two.
I'm almost positive.
If only there was a way.
Spirited Away is number
know.
One. I'm almost positive it's number two. Because it passed Princess Mononoke already. So.
Right. Okay. Well, at any rate, it's doing really, really well. I was excited to see it because it was this giant phenomenon, right? But I wasn't, like, super excited because I am not that big a fan of the films of Makoto Shinkai. In fact, I would say I don't really like any of them.
I
respect them. I don't enjoy them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I like one, and even then it didn't get, like, emotions out of me. I don't like, oh, this is a film that I cherish. It was just, I can appreciate what this was going for, and then the other ones, not so much.
So I rewatched a bunch of them after seeing Your Name, because I was like, man, I gotta go back, because this dude, I didn't know he had this film in him. I really didn't know that. I mean, that's... Now, that sounds kind of condescending, like, oh, this artist was marginal. No, of course not. Like, he's an amazing artist who makes amazing things that just aren't for me. Mm. But when I say that, like, this was the work of, like, an incredibly confident animator at the peak of his writing and animating skills. Like, right. He has taken everything he knew and put it into this, and he made a phenomenon. And that, yeah, it was... It was really something. So we have been asked not to spoil the film. Right. And I think that's a reasonable request because it's not really out in theaters yet here. So I feel like we can talk sort of around the edges of the film and talk about why we liked it so much and then maybe go into the catalog a little bit. So I guess without talking too much about the exact story, what was it about this thing that grabbed you so much, that you love so much about it?
Well, I mean, compared to his other work?
Compared to his other work, just in general.
All right, well, if you've seen... The biggest thing I thought going in, like, I was excited for the movie going in because I'm not as hard on Shinkai as you are taste-wise.
Well, I'm kind of a dick about it.
I don't like his movies either prior to this one, necessarily. I just don't have as strong of an active dislike, I guess. And the thing I kept hearing about this movie is like, oh, well, it has a really strong plot. And it's like, what? You know, yeah. Because that's not Makoto Shinkai's speed. And so I was intrigued by that. I was like, everyone is saying, people like of all different ranges and tastes are saying like, oh, this has a really strong script.
Yeah.
Like, this is really well plotted out. And I was like, that intrigues me because the biggest thing to me that was missing about Shinkai's stuff, my favorite, somebody asked, like, which one do you like? My favorite movie of his, I think his most successful work is 5 Centimeters Per Second. I think the club's the closest to, like, an art film. Like, once again, it's not story-focused, but
that's the one most people say they love.
It's the best one, I think, prior to this. Just like Your Name, like, it picks up some strong visual metaphors and keeps the through line all through the entire thing and, like, makes a statement and stays with you a little bit instead of just being pretty imagery. And I think that's his strength. It also embellishes his strength the most, which is really evoking how certain times and places in your life make you feel and putting that into words really well. And it's like, that's his strength, absolutely. So I appreciated that, and I was like, I would be happy to see that from a movie if it had a story, and that's his problem. So when I heard this had a tight script, I was like, okay. And so, absolutely, going into it and coming out of it, the biggest thing is, like, this just has a really, really well-thought-out, immaculately paced script that he thought a lot about. There's not a minute of dead air or unnecessary anything in it. And
there is, like, a little bit, but...
Well, yeah, but that's for tone. It's for languishing in the setting and stuff like that. But I don't, like, but you could say 5 Centimeters Per Second. You could say, like, there's... You know, minutes.
I rewatched.
Not necessary.
I rewatched two and started a third, so like I know how much time is wasted in his.
I rewatched all this time.
There's a lot of time wasted in the Garden of Words, and it's 45 minutes.
Yeah, Garden
long.
Of Words is.
We'll talk about it
anyway. But like economy of storytelling is not the end all be all. So people don't think economy of storytelling is that really important, but it is important for making a big hit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. People expect a certain kind of structure, and in order to play to the widest audience possible, millions and millions of people, you got to hit enough of a structure that works for everyone. And this was, you know, this got it. But the thing I wasn't expecting, the thing I really loved about the movie, it has humor in it.
Yes.
None of Shinkai's movies have, like, levity. They are
heavy. There's a lot of levity in it.
Sadness, like, at all times. And it's like, this movie jumps out the gun with joie de vivre. Like, here's the good things.
It's full of it. Yeah.
It's full of the good things of life. And then it goes, and now we're going to get sad. And then, like, the sadness that he's so good at cultivating and has been so prominent in all his movies, like, Garden of Words, I would say, succeeded in conveying sadness, maybe best. 5 Centimeters. Those two, maybe. But, like...
Even Garden of... Garden of Words. Garden I'm of sorry. Words. I'm so ready to talk about Garden
it's not,
of Words.
I didn't say it was good. I said it in terms of cultivating sorrow.
A Quentin Tarantino film.
No, he understands... Okay, you can have to explain that one. He understands cultivating sadness very well. And so, like, So by, for once, starting a movie with, like, 40 minutes of happiness, the sadness works, like, and I like that. I really love that. I love that about anime specifically, because it's not something that Western media does as much.
Yeah.
Where you could be really, really happy, and then, boom, comes the sadness hammer. I love it when that's done well. When it's done poorly, of course, it's the worst. But, like, anime is very willing to do that more so than Western media. And so, yeah, Your Name does it perfectly.
Yeah. I was a little surprised at how light it was for you know, a lot of its runtime. It's pretty light. It's not super, super heavy, which is odd given the stakes, you know, in the film. But the thing that struck me, like, the most about it, aside from, like, how entertaining and touching and well-written and endearing it was and how much I cared about the characters and everything, was, like, I couldn't believe, I kept thinking about the victims of the 2011 tsunami, mm-hmm. and how much Shinkai must have thought about what those people went through, and the feelings that you have when you lose somebody in a natural disaster or in something like that, mm-hmm. in like a war or whatever, how much he must have had to have thought about that, mm-hmm. and how much he had to put those things together in order to come up with a narrative like this, and the obvious, it is empathizing with those victims on such a deep and recognizable level. That's one of the reasons why the film's such a huge success, is because it is distilling those feelings in such an emotionally intelligent and just remarkably clear-eyed way. Like, there is a through line on his thoughts about loss in this movie that are profound in some cases. Like, the way that he has processed that disaster produced this beautiful film.
Yeah.
It's an amazing movie.
Yeah, well, I think he's always been really good at processing intimate emotions. In 5 Centimeters Per Second, it was one of the things I like about that movie is, like, it's a movie where nothing happens purposely, because it's about decisions that you didn't make. Things that you should have, like, tossed caution to the wind and just done it, and then you don't. The whole movie is about regret. Regret for not, like, speaking your feelings, basically. And, you know, and that's so it's good in that context. But, like, yeah, by tapping into an emotion that was, like, sort of a national trauma emotion that everyone was feeling, and then exploring it intimately and explaining it as well as he did, as well as he's done other emotions and other in his past work, with a strong story, it was just like, it's like a bombshell. It's just, it's the perfect storm of stuff that's going to speak to a very wide audience. And yeah, like, it's universal. You don't have to understand what happened to Fukushima to understand the story and for it to work really well for you. But absolutely for that audience who innately, because it's not like about Fukushima, but it dabbles in those emotions so heavily that, like, it's just an added, oh God, I can't imagine if you were actually, you know, that actually affected you personally.
I just want to point out something about this film that's it's important to me philosophically to just say this. Now, I'm not saying that this movie is doing this or has the capacity really to do it. I'm just saying that the reason that it's that this movie felt so, well, one of the big reasons that this movie felt so vital to me was that because he was empathizing with loss in such a way that it's the film's almost The film's almost there. It's therapeutic in a way, almost very therapeutic in a way. And when you think about and empathize with feelings on that level, pain on that level, and you dig deep down inside and underneath it, and you understand that pain that much, and you're that accomplished an artist that you can articulate a way of thinking about that pain that is profoundly healing and speak to people about their pain in a way that they may not have recognized before or not have thought about it in that way before, you can really change people. You can change the way they think. Like, this is what art is, the best art is supposed to be doing.
Right.
The best art is supposed to help you deal with your emotions,
right,
in a way that
put your personal feelings into a language that can be put out there and then interpreted by other people who have similar feelings or maybe completely different feelings and help them understand theirs.
Yes. You know? And now, I'm not saying that Your Name is a profound example of something that does this and it's going to heal all. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that artists strive to make something that is this emotionally competent, this emotionally profound their whole lives.
Yeah.
And this is what they reach for. And not only that, this is an artist that you can watch grow. You watch him blossom. You can watch his career. As a critic, this is the joy of life for me. This is the meaning of being a critic, is seeing an artist who, like this, go basically fucking Super Saiyan in front of you, like, just explode in front of you and become this passionate, incredible, creative force that creates movies with the potential to change the way people think about shit.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting that he's been honing particularly
like the potential here.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Taking it back to his first feature, like, he's been honing these skills of, like, so obviously the way his movies look is the biggest draw. They are immediately mainstream level attractive, they're extremely, like, bloom heavy and intricate detail, and, like, you know, they're beautiful, but they're also beautiful in an extremely commercial way.
He's
been honing that skill since Place Promised. Like, Place Promised looks like it was made by four people,
we were saying they were doujinshi movies.
That and Voices of
His early stuff are. Is like doujinshi movies,
and it's like a doujinshi movie and made by some chuny, and especially in the case of Place
so
Promised has,
mean
no look I'm chuny bio I don't own that, but like, it's the story of Place Promised is very Chunibyo. And so he's been honing the skill for how things look and for how emotions feel for years, for years and years. And the thing he was missing was just a tight story, like a tight, accessible mainstream story. It was all he was missing. And you really don't think about that because you just hadn't been thinking about, like, his work and what it was really missing until something like this happens. And then you're like, oh, like, it was just, he just had to get to the point where he was picked up the biggest cog in his work that was missing in order for it to reach a larger audience. But I wanted to say about the Place Promised is what's interesting is that Your Name is kind of a fulfillment of what that, like, messed up, barely functional little movie was trying to do, because it has, like, the same emotional through line, it has the same magical realism hook, and it has the same, like, there's through lines for all his work, but his very first feature, Place Promised, is, like, really close to Your Name in terms of the underlying, like, this girl he meets in a dream, girl he meets in a dream, magical realism.
It's kind of like
big thing in the sky that, like, represents this big metaphorical emotional through line that's affecting an entire country. Like, it's like all this stuff, and even there's a shot where guy and girl reach to each other across sunlight, and they in some way contact in a way that shuts out the sun. All of that in the first movie, so it's like it's not just, well, I guess I'll do what mainstream audiences want. Obviously, this is coming from a place of, like, natal, the ideas that he always wanted to communicate, because it was in his first movie, and now he's like, here's a good version of that. Here's a not bad version of that.
Yeah, you know? Exactly, and, like, oh, man. Yeah, Place Promised in early days. And the funny thing is, like, those early movies, like, the reason that this movie works so well, and those early movies maybe didn't on this kind of a commercial level, is, like, before, you know, he's a fetish filmmaker. He's making, and people always misinterpret that, but Tarantino is a fetish filmmaker.
Stanley Kubrick,
he's a fetish filmmaker. Mm-hmm. Like, these guys...
Should clarify, we are using terminology that literally, like, other people have come up with it, but we're using, like, words that we came up with to describe it, so we should probably explain.
It's not a common film term, but I was about to explain what I meant by that. Basically, like, what these guys are preoccupied with, they have their preoccupations, and what their movie is going to be about is the preoccupation. Tarantino has a fetish for mixing all these things together, using certain types of dialogue, certain types of scenes, certain colors, certain outfits, certain actors, certain places he's putting the camera. It's all about him fetishizing those shots.
Yes. Not sexually.
Fixation.
This is an image. If you made a collage of the images that recur in this person's brain, and they just pour it in their film, films. A lot of people call that auteur theory. The difference between what we're talking about and auteur theory just means anybody who has, like, a stamp that makes a movie their own, regardless of the hundreds of billions of crew working on it. And that can also mean, like, for Ikuhara, that means, for Kunihiko Ikuhara, that means, like, a deeper level of themes that he wants explored and stuff like that. Like, the imagery and the visual style of his movies, excuse me, of his shows is completely different over and over. Like, all of Ikuhara's stuff looks a little different. The devices he uses are different. So he's not a fetishist, what we're saying, in the term that we're using, but he is an auteur.
Yeah.
When we're talking about fetishists, we're talking about somebody who isn't concerned with the deeper layers of storytelling necessarily. They are concerned with, here's an image that pops up in my head. Here is a personal taste that I have. And they pour that into their movies. And
Hitchcock. Yeah.
Hitchcock is another one. And if you're bad at that, nobody understands your movies. Basically, if you're that kind of filmmaker and you're bad at it, then your movie's never gonna get off the ground. If you're good at it, then you are on a tour in a way that is like an inimitable. Everybody who tries to imitate Tarantino makes terrible movies.
Yeah.
Everybody who tries to imitate Hitchcock without taking on their own thing.
Remember, like, Smoking Aces?
Yeah, it's always bad. And anybody
that
who
was a genre in the 90s.
Anybody who I think tries
shitty Tarantino movies.
Yeah, anybody who I think tries to imitate Makoto Shinkai is going to have a bad time because
especially now, yeah.
Because his stuff is just so tied to something that he could probably not explain to you why he puts these specific things necessarily in it.
But every single movie beforehand was just about his fetishes. It was just, I'm going to show you this pedal, and I'm going to show you this brain station, and I'm going to show you...
Not children who chase lost voices.
Okay, right. But that's the exception to the rule I'm talking about. To make my point, the point is, like, the films earlier were strung together by repetition of these fetishes you would see over and over and over again.
You're like the steam that
Your
comes
name
out of the rice pot.
Doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It does not. There's, like, a few shots that are kind of, all right, I'm watching a Shinkai movie, but, like, almost not at all.
Apart from that, it looks like he was able to sort of kill his darlings and go in and go, like, okay, I like this, but it doesn't add anything. Or, I like this, and it does, so I should enhance it and diminish the other things that I might just put in there because here's a woman's feet in the rain.
Right, and it's super important to point out that this was his purpose. This is what drove him. This is what he made this movie specifically for. So we went to this premiere where he was there. He was at this Q&A. Mm-hmm. There's a photo floating around of him walking down the aisle. I'm sitting right there next to him. And then I was at a press conference with him on Monday. He took a few of my questions. That will be up on ANN within the next 3 or 4 days. It's being transcribed right now. And honestly, this is a dude who is working the circuit. Mm-hmm. All of his answers are very perfectly, like, here is what the press will want to hear if I'm going to win an Oscar.
Yes.
He is very, it's not rehearsed so much as it just is, this dude is working the press. I know somebody, like, he wants this. He wants this to be giant. He wants this to be commercial. And he said this in the press conference, I was always going for the Ghibli audience, mm-hmm. which,
as evidenced
if,
by
in which case, I would like
failure.
To get in a time machine and say, like, my
Don't
dude,
like this. Yes.
My dude, you're doing some things differently that, anyway, but he was always going for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he just put it together finally,
right?
Because he
and
definitely
clarify,
got it.
This is not really anything like a Ghibli movie. This is a Makoto Shinkai movie.
No, but he rips off Ghibli, like, a few times in it, to the point where they don't feel like homage. It feels like you're just copying that shot.
I really do.
There's a few shots of food that are just...
But that's his
Ghibli.
Thing.
That's a Ghibli thing.
Yes.
Those were Ghibli eggs and bacon.
Okay. Ghibli eggs and bacon. But the rice pot was coated
no.
Shinkai rice pot.
Well, okay. You're right. That was a Shinkai rice pot. That was the same scene as the Ghibli food. He's fucking around, man. That guy's fucking around.
I think, here's the thing. We have seen Makoto Shinkai make a straight-up, this is almost indistinguishable from a Ghibli movie before, which was Children Chase Lost Voices, which is
okay.
doesn't look
so
like a, I want to say that.
Okay,
like
so I rewatched a few Shinkais after this just to see, like, hey, I don't really remember much about these other than being bored, and I loved this other movie to the point where I, like, really want to see it again. So I'm going to watch these other movies. So what I watched was The Garden. I watched about 20 minutes of 5 centimeters per second and remembered that 5 centimeters per second is the speed at which you wake up from a nap and realize you were watching a Makoto Shinkai movie.
Oh, I was watching the boring ass movie.
I understand why people liked it, but then I watched The Garden of Words, which I had not seen, and I didn't like it.
It was a short movie that was long. It was like, oh, this is a 15-minute short that
felt
drug
like
out to 45.
Okay, now maybe I'm just a pervert or I'm shallow. I just kept thinking, does he have a foot thing? Does he have a foot thing?
I don't think so. That was not my impression.
All those lovingly animated feet?
No, it's another thing. He's good.
Anytime I see that in a movie, I'm like, does this guy have a foot? Do you know how many movies... where, like,
there
it turns
enough,
out it's a secret foot fetish? Like, the director has a foot thing?
Yeah, I know, but there weren't enough lovingly animated feet, and it's not present in any of his other work, so I'm going to say it was a metaphorical through line about...
You're right.
Up and
you're right. I'm just saying, I had the thought, that's the Tarantino joke. That's what I kept sitting there thinking, like, you know, Tarantino's in Texas all the time. They could have got him to...
Yeah, well...
Dub the...
Yeah. Can you imagine Tarantino's voice as
no.
the protagonist of Garden of Words? Would you like to do your impression of perhaps if that had happened?
Nope.
No, you wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't. I don't have a Tarantino.
You don't have
I feel like I could do one. My voice is nasally. It has that...
You could do it if you just like watched his habits and imitated him.
I feel like it'll turn into... I feel like it would turn into Jay Leno. I feel like it would turn into Jay Leno.
Yeah.
No one wants a Jay Leno impression. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Anyway.
Nobody. But, yeah, well, I would point out, so Children Who Chase Lost Voices does not, to me, does, like, Your Name feels
okay,
like a Shinkai movie.
That I hadn't seen that all the way through.
Yeah.
I didn't remember anything about it. And are you fucking kidding me?
It's so bad.
So I turned it on, and within the first, like, 3 minutes, it's like... Fuck you.
Yeah.
There's like a girl sitting there, and Ghibli girl sitting there,
and
the little fox thing
runs
up on her shoulder, and she's like, yee! And you're like, fuck this.
That is not safe for YouTube. Yes, it is. but I, so that's what I'm saying. You're like, oh, Your Name, Cribs from Ghibli. And I'm like, a little, but it feels like a Makoto Shinkai movie. It just feels like he acquired a sense of humor but imbued his movie with that. And like, it feels like he's just made a more commercial version of what Makoto Shinkai always was. Ghibli ripoff is Children Chase Lost Voices. It's
yeah.
so much a Ghibli ripoff that it doesn't feel like a Shinkai movie. It
yeah.
has like none of his visual style. It has none of his emotional... Like, they jump through plot beats in that, and there's no
yeah.
emotional marination whatsoever. And it's like, Shinkai, you're good at emotional marination.
I
Don't take it out of the movie.
My overwhelming...
Just build other
yeah.
strengths around it.
My overwhelming thought was like, am
it's
I...
so bad.
I don't want to watch Earthsea again. This is Tales from Earthsea to Worse Than Earthsea.
Yeah, he did a perfect image of a Ghibli movie, but he
that
didn't
sucks.
Actually make yeah that he didn't actually make a good Ghibli movie because it doesn't look as good as Ghibli. Like, Ghibli does have more resources.
He made the worst Ghibli movie.
He made the worst Ghibli movie, but it's just like
The worst Ghibli movie is Origin: Spirits of the Past. This is
oh,
better
right.
than
is
that.
Second...
It is better than that.
Yeah,
it is better than Origin: Spirits of the Past.
Shit, I was going to say something important. I don't remember what it was. It probably wasn't important. Anyway.
That movie, fuck.
It's
I didn't
bad.
Get through the whole thing.
It's bad.
From the parts I watched, I was like, this is better than Earthsea, I can tell. No, it's not better than Earthsea.
No, it's worse than Earthsea. That's what I was going to say. Earthsea is better. He made a Imitation Ghibli movie that was worse than Earthsea.
Yes.
I was going to say.
He made the... Yeah, okay, right.
Which is crazy.
Anyway.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. So, that Anime News Nina strip with the...
right.
The fake Ghibli movie is exactly what this movie feels like. It's not... I'm not joking. Like, it...
Yeah.
If you've seen that Anime News Nina strip, is like, it's like...
The space whale is...
The space
yeah.
whale that explodes, and the pole that they have to bring back the elder's head on or whatever, and the grumpy prince, and like... That's the movie, no exaggeration, that Makoto Shinkai made, and it's like, that's a bad idea. You shouldn't
yeah.
do that. And so, but yeah, like, so, he's imitated Ghibli before, almost perfectly, like a perfect, terrible impression that you don't want to watch, and Your Name is not that. It just maybe takes... The things he takes from Ghibli in that are the things you take from any successful, like, family movie or mainstream hit.
Yeah. Someone in the chat brought up Boy and the Beast, which, I have to admit, felt like Children Who Chase Lost Voices and, like, Origin, like...
It was more Ghibli. It was very Hosoka.
It's a little bit better than those, but
it was more Ghibli than his past work. He was definitely doing more imitation there.
But that's another, like, bad family script movie.
It's the first one he wrote. Prior to those, all of his movies
he didn't
were
write
by his...
Perfect Mom or Perfect Family?
No.
He only wrote Perfect Dad?
Those were written by his collaborative screenwriter, and he said, nope, I'm going to write Boy and the Beast all by myself, and you shouldn't have done that.
Hey, his next movie is also about parents. Did you know that?
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
He's got to think for family. I like Summer Wars. I like it a lot. I like Summer Wars. I like the first two-thirds, the first everything but the last 10 minutes of Girl Who Leapt Through Time. 10 minutes almost ruins it, but...
The last third of the first Digimon movie.
I like the work he did on Digimon.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. I love digital monsters, in case you couldn't tell.
Oh, yeah. All right. Okay. All right. Hey, let's talk about anime this week. Go see Your Name. It'll be in theaters 2017. If you're in L.A., it's playing right now. And it's playing in a few places. A couple countries around the world. Australia, the U.K., I think you can go see it. Mm-hmm. Super good. Obviously, let's talk about anime. Briefly, I want to talk about Girlish Number. I had to catch up. I watched two episodes. And it was, so that show is getting so cynical and so angry that I remarked on Twitter that it feels like the show's villain, Kuzu P, the producer, who's just... Now they just say that trash Kuzu. They just call him that garbage.
They go Kuzu
that human
Simon.
Garbage Kuzu.
Yeah,
Kuzu
Simon instead of Kuzu Simon. They're like, wait, what?
Yeah, I feel like he could just drive the entire cast over a cliff in a bus, and everyone dies, and you wouldn't really be that bummed out about that, and the show wouldn't be that bummed out about it. The show would be like, well, like, and then credits. Mm-hmm. That is the most self-hating.
I feel like it has a lot of compassion for those two more experienced Seiyuu.
So there was a full episode with just those two, and they got along, and it showed it. That was like the brief, shining moment where, like, oh, real friendships can happen, and these people do find each other. Friendship people do find each other that way. Mm-hmm. But that was like the one moment, and it goes right back to Cheetos being the worst person in the world, and she really is terrible. Like in the most recent episodes.
Well, that's what you were like. I still like her. I was like, I feel like
I do kind of still like her. I do kind of still like her.
It is at the point where I've kind of lost the bloom is off the rose for me and Girlish Number. That's not bad or anything. I'm not as enamored with it because it's really not respectful to its protagonist. Like you can make somebody a terrible person and still like not be looking down on them. Girlish Number is past the point where it feels like it is looking down on Chitose, and it's like. All
right. Cheetos. Yeah, the show looks down on her, and I don't really like that, but I don't know. I'm just going to keep quiet. I really want to see how it wraps up. I feel like everyone could just pull out a gun and put it in their mouth, and the end.
Yeah. I don't dislike it, and everyone would be like, I don't think it's that dark. I feel like it's...
Wouldn't be that much worse than working in the anime industry for another day. Like, that's...
Yeah,
you guys hate your fucking jobs.
You know, I mean, like, there was... I feel like there's definitely more optimism in the show than that particular extreme, but, yeah.
Okay.
Well, they brought on...
This is the dark before the end, though. Like, it's gonna get super cynical, and then maybe it'll have a little uplifting at the end, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's okay. Like, I feel like Girlish Number, for the most part, is not making... So, the guy who wrote it is a light novel author, and it feels a little young adult fiction-y. It feels a little like a show on a cable channel for teens sometimes, and that the stakes are kind of... Meh.
Yeah.
The stakes could be higher. And I don't mean, like, world-ending stuff. I mean, like, Shirobako felt like a more of, like, a prestige kind of TV show, where it really felt like there were emotional stakes. Girlish Number is sort of playing in teenage-level emotions about... stuff about the industry and stuff like that, and it's fine. It's like, it's still a good show, but I'm not like super into it because I'm like, okay, I already understand where this is going emotionally. Like, I understand where this is going emotionially as of episode 4, and since then it's just been like, yep, this is the very basic understanding that you reach as a working professional when you first get into stuff, and you're like, oh, this isn't what I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Very basic relationships with your family when they don't agree with your job, like basic stuff that you start realizing when you enter. Like the working world and on a teenage level of emotion, which is totally fine. But I'm just like, because it's 12 episodes of that. So it's very YA, you know, which is fine. It's good. It's good YA. Like that guy writes, between that and Snafu, that guy writes good young adult fiction, which is presumably kind of what this is.
Well, it seems pretty fucking cynical. Like,
I really don't think it's that bad. Like, the most recent episode, like, endeared you to the producer.
You're only saying you don't think it's that bad and compared to the way I just described it. Mm. It is easily the most cynical thing that's been on anime in a little while. It's really cynical.
Yeah, that's about it in a real-world setting, yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure what you meant. But the most recent episode in
I always got to get everything past you with a qualifier. I'm like, just trying to, like, I can't speak out in generalizations with you.
But, like, okay, well, the most recent episode endeared you to Kuzupi, like, explain kind of where he came from. Like, he's not just a cartoon.
No, it didn't.
It did.
It did?
Yeah, he went to the Hostess Club and they explained why he's become such a piece of shit.
Because he's competitive with another guy.
Well, no, yeah, but they were explaining, like, he used to work really hard, and then this other guy who didn't work as hard just basically took everything from him.
So it turned him into a corrupt, womanizing fraud?
No, not womanizing. He goes to a Hostess Club. He's not stealing anybody's girlfriend. No, it's just he doesn't care anymore. He has decided, like, I put all this effort into stuff, and now they just put me on, like, I had to quit the agency that I love, and now I'm working on these backwoods projects that, like, won't succeed, so why even try? And, yeah, like, that's not an excuse for his behavior, but
it's real. It's realistic.
Yes.
It's realistic.
Exactly.
I will give them that. It's so relentlessly fucking cynical that it's a little tough to take sometimes, man. Mm-hmm. That's all. Anyway, I only saw the Yuri on Ice, 8 and 9? I didn't watch this week's yet. But I know what happened. Because, you know, if you're watching a popular show, simulcast...
Spoilers on Ice!
The spoilers start the minute the show starts airing.
Spoilers on Ice.
Hey, baby.
I don't know why spoiler, like, hypersensitive bullshit spoiler culture doesn't, matter at all for, like, no one in anime gives a shit. Like, no one cares. It's just like, whatever, here's what happened. Like, it's an original show, man. It's not even a manga.
People are just so excited. They're so excited, and they expect you to be watching it, like, as it comes out. And your bubble also is people that are going to watch it right when it comes out. So.
Yeah, that's true. I know that it's self-selecting Twitter bubble and everything, but it's just... Anyway, so tell me, Jacob, how was the most recent episode of Yuri on Ice?
It was great.
Oh, yeah?
They got engaged.
Hey, I know what that's like.
Like, it was... I was like, what was funny was a couple episodes ago, I remarked to somebody, I was like, there was, I said, the odds that, like, this is not going to end in a symbolic marriage, I meant symbolic. I was like, this show, the way it's going, it's already reached, like, this level of gay, and there's not much content left. I said, by episode 12, there's going to be a symbolic marriage. I kid you, I'm going to put my foot on it right now. Not only was it not a symbolic marriage, it was a literal marriage. It occurred in episode 10. We still have 2 episodes left to go.
Still time for it all to fall apart.
Engaged. They got engaged and exchanged rings and declared it, and everybody was happy for him, and it was like, what is
episode
happening?
12, he's going to wake up and be like, oh!
What is happening?
Oh, it was all a dream.
It's so weird. Like, there aren't many anime that have a straight proposal and exchangement of rings and, like, a declaration of, like, that have a hetero version of that. That's not very common for anime because a lot of it's aimed at teenagers, but, like, this has 2 men just, yes, we're getting married, and, like, they have rings, and it was emotional to me. I actually, mine's missing right now. I put it somewhere and didn't put it back on after I took a shower. Anyway, but, like, yeah, like, it was very emotional for me because, yeah, we just got married this year, and it was like, oh my god, like, you know, seeing that kind of reflected. And yeah, like, there's other people want to discuss the ending. So the ending of episode 10, you have not seen it yet. I don't feel like... He's tempting you to pick him up, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, do you mind if I just say, or, like, because we're supposed to discuss this podcast?
Does it matter?
It
doesn't matter anymore. Just tell me what happened. Suck all the enjoyment out of the latest episode of this magical show.
You gotta watch it when it comes out, man. You gotta watch.
I would have to watch it right when it, like, at 2 p.m. Pacific on Wednesdays. I am usually working then.
Right. Well, the thing that everybody was freaking out about was, like, not that there was many complaints about stereotypes in Yuri on Ice, but, like, there was still a complaint about, like, all right, magical gay Mary Poppins Victor shows up to show Yuri, like, basically introduce Yuri to his own sexuality and save his career. Like, that's kind of a fantasy. And that's fine for this show. Like, okay, whatever. Like, maybe he's just that capricious. But episode 10 ended with a twist that Yuri actually asked Victor to be his coach when he was blind, stinking drunk, and also danced around lasciviously and tore off all his clothes and, like, was the life of the party and just doesn't remember it because he was drunk as hell. And Victor, you know, remembers that. And that was the reason, that was the real reason that he came out to, you know, because he was like, you know, I think I love this guy. You know, like this, I've never seen anybody like this before who just respects me as an equal and really wants to be, like, that I spoke to him emotionally and he's inspired by me. And, like, obviously there's a sexual side of him that we never saw on the ice. And so he remembered that. And then a year later, you know, basically after seeing the viral video, he's like, you know what? I'm gonna take a risk on this. I'm going to see if this guy likes me back. And so that changes absolutely everything about how the show has gone so far from, like, here's this magical gay inspiration who also for some reason loves Yuri to, like, here's where that really came from. Like, this was a big emotionally vulnerable risk that Victor took based on maybe my life can be different. Maybe if I retire and be a coach, this will be better for me. And it was like,
some pretty good writing.
It's really good. I was like, oh my god. And also just,
I'm pretty happy about it right now, and I'm not even hearing about it.
And just the visual,
I'm like, that's great.
Just the visual of Yuri progressively losing his shit and doing more and more disgustingly lewd things on camera was like, because it starts out like, aha, he's prancing around drunk. Oh, he's taking off all his clothes. Oh, he's pole dancing. Oh, he's pole dancing on top of Kristoff. Oh, Jesus. Like, it just gets more and more insane. And it's like, this was in him all along and nobody knew. And it was just like, people's brains exploding. It was great. Anyway. That show was real good.
Well, I'm excited to finally watch it. Maybe I'll do that tonight.
Guess he only comes.
I'll watch the last two in the air. I'll do it right away. I didn't really get around to much of anything else. Westworld ended. That was great.
Yes.
It had an Evangelion ending for the first season. Mm-hmm. Very Gendo Ikari at the end of that thing. Mm-hmm. Good show.
Yeah.
Kind of turns shitty video gamey, like, in the last third. And according to me, not shitty, but it just gets hacky. Like, it gets hacky eventually.
I would say it gets
better eventually.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it gets hacky. I would say that in order to fill in the occasional spaces between all the stuff that they have to, like, lay down, it gets a little bit, like, sensationalist. But, yeah, like, I wouldn't say hacky or crappy. I would just say, like, okay, we have to fill a minute here.
Here's, well, I'm using harsh vocabulary words. But I was really hot on it, and then it was like, that was kind of stupid. Or, like, this is just video game plotting. It's not going to say anything, like, super profound. It's just going to be video game plot. That's fine. Mm-hmm. It's extremely entertaining the whole way through.
Yeah.
And the ending was really good, but we don't get the next season until 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I enjoyed it, I think, even more than you did. And it was, I don't know, it's kind of like what I wanted Game of Thrones to be, which is, like, I'm fine with the schlock, like, I'm a schlock, I get the schlock peddling, I enjoy it, I'm okay with the sensationalist, I don't need this to be chin-stroking art, but I want it to have some sort of thematic through line, and Game of Thrones doesn't really have that to me, so Westworld is, like, just really strong thematic through line, and these big, larger-than-life characters that represent strong viewpoints, and, you know, like, kind of what I wanted to see from speculative science fiction.
Game of Thrones doesn't have anything but plot.
Yeah, it's just plot, it's just
twist. It's just story,
and then,
yeah.
And then... And it's like, I don't... This is not saying anything interesting.
And then Jon Snow came back, and then he's dead again.
And then he's dead again.
Now he's back again.
I'm just like, okay, it's a soap opera, which is fine, but I don't really want to watch hour, like, literally, like, 30 hours of a soap opera. I just,
you know who's a bad actor? Mm-hmm. Emilia Clarke and the guy who plays Jon Snow, Kit Harington, bad actors.
Eternally parted mouth.
And they're in fucking everything now.
They're pretty.
And they are bad actors.
But they're pretty.
I like him okay on the I don't like Emilia Clarke on that show. Kit Harington's fine, but he doesn't have to do anything but pout and pull a sword out. Mm-hmm. They're bad actors.
To be fair, Emilia Clarke, yes, I've seen her in other things, so I know she's a bad actress, and it's not just the role, but the role of Daenerys, my hand to God, is terrible. I hate that character.
I know you hate that character.
That character.
You know what, man? You know what the world doesn't need? Another fucking podcast where they talk about Game of Thrones. Holy shit. Let's move on.
Anyway.
I'm angry about it.
I'm sorry.
Angry about it. All right. Let's take some Twitter questions. How about it?
Okay.
Oh, wait. Before we do that, there are a few things you should know about coming up on Anime News Network, including the return of Vice Luna, a comic strip that I write with Jacob. We have a new artist. I think it looks great, and it'll be out. We're currently aiming for a mid-January relaunch. Mm-hmm. We have 4 pages a month. Read it if you can.
Yeah.
Best 2016 content's coming up. We've got the best of fall 2016 runs December right before Christmas. I think it's the Wednesday before Christmas or the Friday before Christmas. One of those 2 days. The week between Christmas and New Year's, which is exactly a week. It's exactly, I think New Year's is Sunday and Christmas is Sunday. Mm-hmm. That will be the best anime of 2016, 5 days long, like we did last year. Mm-hmm. So look forward to that content. Check it out. Mm-hmm. Next week, like we said, Spankatopia, The Count of Monte Cristo.
Spankatopia.
This is Genkutsuo.
Spanking Kingdom of Utopia.
No, that's that flaky spinach puff pastry.
I have.
Whenever I see it, I always think The Count of Monte Cristo because it has the same number of syllables as Genkutsuo. Sort of.
This may be one of the strangest things that you have ever... It's the strangest rabbit trails that you have ever...
No, it's not. It's definitely not one of the strangest same, rabbit trails
you know,
I've ever gone
down.
It has
the same number of syllables as Genkutsuo. Why, literally every four-syllable word in the world. But you know what it reminds me of?
You know
what
this has five
this
syllables?
This thing with no...
It has five syllables, so I'm wrong.
Yeah, so you're wrong. So
I'm just
five
sharing the dumb shit.
Pastry,
I'm just sharing the dumb shit that comes
like
into my head.
That sounds like spanking utopia.
I'm just... Sharing the dumb shit that comes into my head.
All right, thank you All right. for that. Thank you for that gift.
That's why people listen to AnCast. Mm-hmm. To hear my non-sequitur thoughts.
Spinacopita.
Britt wants to know what the Oscar chances realistically are for Your Name. Okay, I think it's gonna get a nomination. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know if Funimation is spending the money or has the... campaign put together to get it one. Those are political. Mm-hmm. G-Kids seems to just have a slot every year. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a merit thing, really. Okay. They have to spend money if they want it to get nominated. Now, that thing's got one trick in its corner, which is incredible box office, incredible word of mouth, and U.S. critics like it a lot and are talking about it. I just saw it was number 9 on one of the Variety critics top 10 lists for the year for everything.
Yeah.
You know, in there with everything else. That means it has a really good shot if it's respected and known and if people have seen it. Mm-hmm. And this thing had huge word of mouth. And the box office really helps that. So I don't know, but I feel like it's got a better shot than a lot of the other stuff that's come out.
Yeah, I don't. It's not that I don't think it has a prayer of winning the Oscars, but based on anecdotes...
I don't think it has a prayer of winning.
Yes.
I don't think it has a chance in hell
but
of winning.
Nomination, yeah.
Nomination is a maybe. That's the only thing we're ever talking about is nomination. Mm-hmm. Winning?
It's going to be... Zuko
Finding
Guillermo.
Fucking Dory, probably.
Really? Yeah, probably. Finding Dory was even weaker than Moana.
Hey, I didn't like Finding... I didn't hate it. How can you hate that movie?
Like the best animated film of the year.
I like how the first 40 minutes of Finding Dory were just Finding Nemo over again. You're like, oh, you remember something about the story in that movie?
Yeah, I don't remember shit. Finding Dory was like...
I would love it if Zootopia won. I liked that movie
a lot. Zootopia, I would say, is as strong as Your Name, only it's just a different kind of movie. Like, they're not comparable.
I don't think it's as good as Your Name.
I wouldn't want to compare them. They're completely different movies as apples and oranges.
Land of Obscusion wants to know, we keep seeing, is Shinkai the next Miyazaki? Will we eventually see, is blank the next Shinkai?
I mean... If he makes a bazillion movies and looks
yes,
paid,
you will definitely see lazy ass journalists saying, "Are you the next Makoto Shinkai sometime in the next 10 years?" Let's see here. Jesse Ulrich wants to know: do you feel there are any long term positives to the unsustainable overproduction of anime currently happening? Some people had jobs.
Yes,
for a while,
more people had low paying jobs and perhaps ends to make better things in the industry.
I mean, that's a tough question. That's, look, questions on the state of the industry, like, watch in 2017 what happens. Right now we are...
Yes. We're, like...
On the edge of a knife.
IDK.
I don't want to say knife. Literally no one in the industry is characterizing this as a dangerous time. They're just saying it's a time of change. That's the only thing I'm hearing. I definitely don't want to put a bunch of alarmist stuff out there. I just want to talk about the overproduction. I just want to make sure we're being honest about what that is and what it means, and it's a bubble, and bubbles burst. And if we're prepared for it...
Just watch. Animation production, traditional animation production will slow down. We'll get fewer shows, but we're going to get 10 more Babuki Barankis per season.
Babuki Baranki 4.
3D CG...
5, 6, 7.
Abominations. Anyway... Just don't cut the frames. Just don't cut the frames. Make it look like Show by Rock, and it's okay.
Britt asks, with Shinkai's writing your name for an Asian audience with the 2011 disaster in mind, according to him, he didn't do that, how might the West's reception differ? So, I mean, anyone who's lost somebody is going to feel something. And even if you haven't, you're probably going to feel something.
I kind of dare you not to feel something from that movie.
It's not a... It is not unfair, nor is it selling the movie short to say that it obviously will have more emotional impact for you if you went through that earthquake and that tsunami.
Jesus,
obviously. It is well written to the point where its messages are universal. Mm-hmm. So,
I would say the only way I think you would not like be emotionally moved by that movie is if you're not. If you don't like supernatural elements in a thing as an emotional thing, or if you just don't like melodrama, because it's melodrama.
Yeah.
It is, you know, world-ending love. Like, but if that just by itself, you just don't cotton to that, then yeah, like, but everybody else, yes, the movie's really hard to get through without feeling something.
Yeah. It definitely is. I cried a lot.
I have a heart of steel. I was emotionally moved. I just think it takes a lot to get me to cry.
No, it doesn't.
It does too. It does too.
Stub your toe. Tyler Dodson wants to know, other than the two Yuris, who is your favorite competing skater in Yuri on Ice? JJ, right? Everybody's going to say JJ.
He's the antagonist, I think, probably doing. No one skates like JJ.
I don't really care about Yurio.
I mean, I understand why he exists. Why he exists. He's not my favorite. My favorite skater is Georgi Popovich, because he just makes me laugh so fucking hard. And he found love. So he's not found love, but moved on. Like, he's dating other women now. And I was, like, really happy that they gave that to Georgie. Like, he's not just a punchline. Georgie, you know, like, they care enough about his feelings to say, stop being such a fuckboy and, like, get over it. And then he does. And it's like, hey, he's dating other women. And, like, you know, got out there. But yeah, Georgi Popovich makes me laugh. But obviously Christoph as well. Christoph is, like, a gay stereotype, but, like, a good one. Does that make sense? Like, he's reminiscent of what people love about unabashedly... feminine gay men who aren't afraid to embrace that side of themselves. He's not like a weird gross stereotype. He's just like, yep, this guy's really gay. Like, here's all these more like more heteronormative looking and acting men, and here's Christoph, you know. So but yeah, Georgie is my favorite.
Right. I don't know, man. I was just thinking the side characters in that show sometimes feel like they're put in there to sell Figmas, and like they sometimes feel like that a little bit. Like,
I think they were just there to fill out the season, like, so it wouldn't be him skating himself.
You know? That's the thing. It's filler, which is fine and it's nice, but those characters don't get that much development, and it's fine.
Yeah,
but it's there to fill out the episodes. I don't really pay that much attention to the characters aside from
some of them are given
the main characters.
Yeah, some of them are given thematic through lines, like the stuff that obviously ties into Yuri and Victor's relationship, like Georgie and like the siblings and stuff like that, where it's like, okay, this is reflecting on the But like some of them, like Guang Hong, are just there because they're in China and here's a Chinese skater.
Well, and someone in the chat points out it helps the show appeal to an international audience.
Oh,
too,
absolutely.
So that's good. Yeah.
And but people, the thing I saw that people were most moved by that I didn't have context for, but obviously some people were affected by it, was there's a Thai skater who skates to a song that is from a movie. It's a fictional movie, but it's emblematic of something that was banned in Thailand for a long time. And so, and he wins using that song from that movie that was, like, not viewable in Thailand. And he's a Thai skater, which is apparently a big deal. Like, there's a lot of people from Thailand who love anime, and, like, they don't see themselves ever in anime. And so, like, to see a major character
That's cool.
who wins the gold, and he's from Thailand, is, you know,
Representation means something. Yeah.
And the American guy is Hispanic, so it's not just a blonde person. You know, a blonde, blue-eyed person. It's Hispanic American, so...
You told me that I should...
Timely.
You told me that, you told me that I look like Yuri.
You do. Like, you do. Like, and your mannerisms and stuff like that. I was like, that reminds me of Yuri. But, yeah.
So if I'm gonna go... If I cosplayed as Yuri, I'd have to wear that.
You'd have to shave all this, though.
I'd have to shave, and I'd have to wear that suit. I'd have to wear this thing he wears.
Which?
The ice skating costume.
The Eros one?
Yeah.
Hope you're ready for that.
Back to the gym with me.
That'd be something. I can't pull off Victor, though. That's the problem. I would have to be Yurio. It would have to be Yuri and Yurio, because I can't pull off anybody but Yurio. Spindly ass.
I think
you could
pull off Victor. I think I feel like you could.
I'd be shorter than you. I don't think so. No, he's.
It would be a weird picture.
No, I could pull off Yurio. That's it.
Branko Bergson wants to know: have you read any Murakami novels? This is one of those things where I would love to say that yes, I've finished several Murakami novels, but sadly, I have not finished a single one of them.
I haven't.
We have like four of them on the shelf.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
I'm not a big reader these days. I don't have time to read the books. So I did all my reading like high school and previous, and then just have not picked up many books since then. To be quite frank with you. So.
Yeah. You don't read a lot.
I don't read.
I read a lot.
Yeah.
That doesn't make me smarter or better than you. I just like to read.
Movies and stuff are my books now.
Yeah. Let's see. AngelX03 wants to know if we'll give Scorching Ping Pong Girls another look now that it seems like more people are warming up to it. So I hadn't noticed this. Is this true? Are more people warming up to Scorching Ping Pong Girls?
That is a bubble thing. That is a...
What that means is that my bubble isn't and your bubble isn't, but that doesn't mean that it's not.
We took a recent poll, like, what shows are you watching, and it's still dead last. Like,
that's for ANN readers, but... I'm just, maybe.
It's not even, is it on Crunchyroll? I don't even remember.
Is that the exclusive Sentai Filmworks thing?
It might be on Crunchyroll.
I think it's on Crunchyroll.
Either way.
Yeah, it's on Crunchyroll.
No, it is not big with anybody. It is maybe your personal bubble thing.
Well, don't condescend.
I'm not condescending. I'm saying I know the demographics.
Hey, man, we're going to have a full review of Scorching Ping Pong Burls at the end.
Sure, that would be great.
Scorching Ping Pong Burls? Is that what? Scorching Ping Pong Girl. We will do a full review at the end of the season.
That would be
totally... Jacob's going to write it.
No.
Jacob's going to write a review of every episode.
You don't want me to do that.
Jacob's going to review the Blu-rays as they come out in Japan.
Yeah, and the 200 people...
Jacob's going to review every Scorching Ping Pong Girl's Figma.
Anyway, so... yeah, there won't be one. Like it is
I'm
going
to promise to write it and
show.
Then never do that.
It is a your bubble show, I think. Not being condescending. I'm just
Everyone
like,
has bubble
I know
shows.
What the demographics are.
Everyone has bubble shows. There's always like one or two that your friends like that... There's enough anime to where it's like that.
I know what people are watching and what's selling, regardless. Like, I love Classical Lloyd, but I'm not going to say that it's like fucking, you know... a big show. So Scorching Ping Pong Girls is kind of like that. It's not really... Yeah.
Lumi wants to know, what's the gayest anime you've seen? This person has a vested interest. They are gay. Yay. That's what the tweet says.
Yuri on Ice. Straight all the way up. I have not seen a more actual gay anime than Yuri on Ice. Not counting your Evolutionary Girl Utena. I was thinking of boys. Of girls, Utena... Maybe Sailor Moon, maybe more Utena. Utena and Uranus, I don't think you can get more fabulous than that. I don't think it's possible.
I'm going to say Earthian. I'm going to say Zetsui Bronze 1999. All right, I'm going to stop listing really old Yaoi OVAs. It is obviously Uranus. There hasn't been a better gay couple.
People mentioning Yurikuma Arashi, Utena, like... The reason I mentioned Yuri on Ice and Utena rather than Yurikuma Arashi is Yurikuma Arashi is about a very, very specific topic, while Utena and Yuri on Ice are more broad, like, the message of acceptance and tolerance and love with specific gayness in it. And, like, heteronormativity is bad. Yeah, heteronormativity is bad. that kind of thing.
No, fake the gay OVA.
I know what you're referring to.
Central Park Media.
Yes, yes, Gravitation. Let's get them all out of our
system. Let's just list them all. Let's just name them. All right.
Okanaganai.
Boku no Pico.
Oh, no, that's going straight for the...
Sorry.
Don't watch an anime called Boku.
Someone has to say it.
Yeah, so somebody's like, Rakugo and Gakutsu are good if you like, if you're talking about gay guy stuff too.
Okay.
And then if you, gay girl stuff, also Aoihana and, yeah, stuff like that. But I don't, nothing compares to the two I just named, so.
Somebody in the chat says, nobody has to say it. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. That is a wrong, whenever anyone says, someone did, nope. Nope.
No one did.
Nope.
No one at all.
Nope, you're just an asshole. That's me. Just an asshole.
Boku no Hero Academia.
That's what they're referring to.
I know, but I just now that's really upsetting.
Oh, for God's sake, let's move on. Nixie asks, in your opinion, what was the most important thing your name did that elevated above Shinkai's previous work? Well, even though it was calculated, obviously the script. Mm-hmm. And you put down your fetishes for a while. That seems like the most obvious things. If you don't like his previous films, you should just watch this. And if you don't like it, it doesn't mean that you just still don't like his movies. Mm-hmm. It means that you didn't like this movie either, but it's so unlike his other movies that I don't feel like there's
I mean, I feel bad saying it's unlike his other movies because it's really... It feels like a Shinkai movie. It doesn't feel like this was, you know...
It
like
does.
Packed into...
Yeah,
it
right.
just feels like a Shinkai movie that was good. Like, I don't have anything else to put it to you.
Yeah, like, you don't want to sit here and say, like, it's not like his other trash.
No, it's not.
Because it's not. He didn't make trash.
He didn't make trash. It just wasn't strong. Like, a lot of his movies are like, well, you're almost to a strong movie. And, like, this is actually a strong movie. So, but it's very much his. Children Chase Lost Voices felt like a robot made it. This feels like a Makoto Shinkai movie.
Yeah. Yuletide Monster wants to know if we will see more original anime movies after Your Name success. I mean, you'll see more from Shinkai.
Yeah, he's definitely going to get the resources he wants after that.
His next one's going to be this wildly indulgent 3-hour Cicada and Railroad Crossing a Palooza. Like, it's 3 hours of feet in the rain.
I really don't think...
And you're like, what did we do? Why did we validate you that much?
Now
I'm stuck in this theater and I can't leave and it's 3 hours long and you're still on this fucking railroad crossing. That's what's going to happen.
Right.
Let's see. Do we have any more Twitter questions? QB the Third wants to know, why is Flip Flappers getting drowned out by Yuri on Ice? I feel both deserve the spotlight. A lot of people have been talking about Flip Flappers in terms of like... Also good representation this season.
Oh, in representation terms. Flip Flappers is doing the thing that a lot of stuff does, Ikuhara's work, for example, that where all of the, it's all, its message is metaphorized in surrealism. So it's all, Flip Flappers is all like surreal, weird imagery that's meant to mean an emotional thing. Yuri on Ice is just a straightforward narrative. And I love surrealism, and I love those metaphor type stories. Obviously, I love Ikuhara, so I'm reviewing Flip Flappers, and I'm largely enjoying it. But that stuff is never going to be as accessible as just telling a story that everybody can understand without like having to read about cinematic language or like the symbolism of flowers or whatever the hell. You know, like Flip Flappers is good, but like it's not as accessible. Like Yuri on Ice is immediately accessible. There's no mistaking what it means and what it's saying and stuff like that. So. Yeah, in terms of people talking about it, like Flip Flappers is there's a little more of a barrier to entry, but there's nothing wrong with that. Like, absolutely, I'm glad that shows like that are made because I really like that kind of storytelling. But it's not for everybody. Yeah. Yuri on Ice is like inviting everybody to the party. So
I feel like Flip Flappers is a show that we'll eventually do a series discussion on.
I don't know. I have to wait to see how it ends.
I'm not asking your permission.
No, I'm just saying, like, I don't know if it's going to be remembered. Like, here's the thing. I am not used to...
I want to see it.
Yeah.
All the screenshots absolutely. Look really good.
Yeah, no, I am used to being... it's weird, because I'm like, I like it, but I still couldn't tell you, like, I'm not used to being 9 episodes into a 13-episode show, and I still can't really tell you what the point is. Like, I understand what it's saying in every episode, but... I am still waiting to really understand where Flip Floppers is going on a deeper level. It's all unfocused. It's good, and its side roads are good, and it's let's do this episode. Those are all good, but as far as coming together into a thing, I really couldn't tell you quite what it is, or if it will be remembered, or what the, you know, it's enjoyable to watch, but it's like I still can't quite tell you what this is that I'm looking at, you know, kind of. Even though I know that it's about like a girl-girl romance, and it's about like the trials of adolescence and stuff like that, like I still don't. I don't have a bigger picture. So, still, somehow. So,
well, you only got a few weeks left. That actually does it for Twitter.
Spill the beans at some point.
Yeah, that does it for Twitter questions. Do we have anything else from the chat? Anybody? Okay, Nats fan wants to know about Final Fantasy 15. Oh, we should also talk about The Last Guardian. Final Fantasy 15 is really good. I am really enjoying it. I'm only really playing it on weekends because it's kind of a time sink. I'm looking forward to Christmas because I'm going to play it a lot over the Christmas break. But it's super fun. I wish the load times were shorter. I'm moving along in the story. The combat's good. It's really surprisingly solid. It doesn't feel like any other Final Fantasy game, but Final Fantasy games don't really feel that much like each other, so that's not a big deal to me. Graphics are good. Yeah, it's surprisingly great. I mean, that's what everyone's saying, but you wouldn't really expect a game that's been in development for that long to be worth anything at all. Like, it'd just be a mess of unfinished ideas and whatever, but it's good. They're talking about patching story in and patching in. Well, I haven't watched that movie they put out. I have a copy of Kingsglaive, the movie that they put out before the game. I haven't watched it yet. It's sitting on the coffee table. Eventually I'll get to it, but if they're patching that stuff in, I might wait a little bit. Because I'm not in any huge rush to finish it. I'm not racing anybody. I'm not reviewing it. So I might just wait a little bit. Wait for them to patch that stuff in. But we did get The Last Guardian, which I put down fucking immediately because the controls were horrible. You, however, are going to play through the whole thing, and you're about 2 hours into it, 2-3 hours?
Yeah, and I'm mostly... So Shadow of the Colossus is one of my favorite games of all time. And even though I didn't enjoy playing Ico, I enjoyed the aesthetic. Absolutely, yeah. I enjoy Ueda, I think is his name. Correct me if I'm wrong. Hiroshi Ueda? Something. I enjoy the guy who makes those games. I enjoy his aesthetic and his...
Well, your like favorite game period is Shadow of the Colossus, right?
That and Majora's Mask, yeah. And it's just... I like the way he tells stories, which is, I mentioned earlier, the surrealism, like, this, like, deep, dug-out-of-the-earth fable-type way of telling stories. I have a poster of Wolf's Rain behind me is another example of this type of story. He tells Wolf's Rain-type stories, which are not surrealism like Ikuhara or Flip Flappers, but, you know, this use of telling a modern fable to evoke strong emotions, and, you know, anyway, so I really love that, and I love that he was like, oh, it was always meant to be a trilogy from Shadow of the Colossus, not from Ico, but once Ico was successful enough to get Shadow of the Colossus going, he's like, well, it was going to be a trilogy, and I want this to be my final statement, so I'm really curious what that statement's going to be, but you're right, the controls are garbage, but everything else about it, I love. So I'm just like, trying to play through it, but I love the way it looks, I love the story so far, I feel like it has gotten into the meat of what this is supposed to be about very quickly. I'm only, like, 2 hours in. I like the rate at which things change, and, like, it introduces... It's one of those games where the controls are only... as crappy as they are to wield, the way that it shows... No, the way that it shows you how to do controls is good, which is... Hey, let me speak. The way that it shows you how to do controls is good, which is, like, there's never any use X to jump. It's just... It'll show you a thing in the upper right to, like... move stuff when it's relevant, but otherwise it doesn't...
When it's relevant.
Well, yeah, well, otherwise...
If you're lucky.
Well, otherwise it's non-intrusive.
Sometimes the controls work.
No, well,
usually no, though.
Yeah, well, I it's not
whatever.
Intrusive. And
I'm gonna watch you struggle to get that fucking dog to do what you need it to do for 8 to 10 hours.
It's not intrusive, but I'm really curious to see where it's going, because I, storytelling-wise, I have absolutely no complaints with this game. I think it's flawless storytelling-wise so far. The controls are janky, but I can get through that. I'm not a gamer.
It's not just the controls. It has, like, the worst camera I've seen in a modern video
camera
game.
Camera is...
The last 10 years, the worst camera.
Yeah, it's free-floating. It's a normal free-floating
Easily
camera,
the worst.
But you would be surprised how much it'll fuck with you. Like, how shitty
it
is.
It floats... Like, you hold down up to move the camera down, and it readjusts, and then... like it goes a little further. Like you can't adjust it to exactly where you want it to be. It's always gonna go.
Here's what it's like. So say the dog, say the guardian is above you, and you're like, okay, I wanna.
It's fucking
look
terrible.
At him while he's jumping, and I'm like this, and then it goes, it automatically goes down. I'm like, okay, don't do that. Okay, I mean, what happens if I look down?
I played 45 minutes. I played 45 minutes of this goddamn thing. I said, no way, no way, am I going through like 10 hours of this, like. fucking what?
But I mean, I love everything else about it. I really want to know where it's going.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to watch you struggle with it.
The dog acts like an animal, and it is not like, you know how Agro was in Shadow of the Colossus, where he wouldn't listen to you all the time. The dog is like that, and I like that about it. I like that the dog doesn't listen to you all the time, and I like that it's like a little menacing. Like it looks like it's maybe gonna kill you at a couple points, and you're trying to figure out why. And it's cool, you know. Yeah.
Do we have any other questions from the chat? Mgak asks, I listened to and enjoyed your From the New World podcast, but it left me with one conspicuous unanswered question. Do you guys think Squealer's actions were justified or in the right? Also, did you feel the depiction of homosexuality in the show was homophobic by portraying it as a scientific machination? Yowza.
I think the second question is fundamentally off. It's not, yeah, no. The Free Love Society thing wasn't, like, scientifically enforced. The premise of the show that is just that everybody's a little bit bi, and they encourage that. Like, the idea is that if you don't enforce heterosexuality, it isn't the natural order of things.
That was never presented as some sort of bizarre eugenics thing.
Right, it wasn't a bizarre eugenics thing. It's just like, well, I have the free love thing, and people are, you know, not as hetero naturally as you might assume. And so that was basically all I was saying. It's like not like they engineered people to be that way. But yeah, as far as Squealer's actions being justified, like, of course they were. They were and they weren't. Like, if I was in his position, I would find them completely justified. But, like, at the same time, we're humans, so we're going to sympathize with the humans.
I mean, Squealer's the kind of character that is written so that the study group has the question, what would you have done in Squealer's position? Like, that is...
Yes.
That's the moral conundrum, right? Like, yeah. What would you do if you were Squealer?
Yeah, if I was a mole rat monster, I'm sure that he would be the hero of the story, because what he does is understandable by that metric. But we are going to resonate with the human characters, and so therefore we have to say, well, I understand what you did, but you still deserve to die horribly, because, you know,
yeah. As much as I want to see things from the mole rat perspective, it's hard for me. let's see here. We got a few questions about our favorite movies of the year so far. And I'm not ready to answer this yet because I haven't seen any of the prestige stuff. I have not seen Moonlight. I have not seen Manchester by the Sea, which opens locally this weekend, I think. So I might go see that.
Or The Handmaiden.
Or Silence. Mm-hmm. Or...
all that stuff.
All that stuff. La La Land. I want to see that. That's probably... Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. I'll let you know early next year, probably, after we've actually seen all those fucking things.
Yeah.
At some point... Like, we usually watch everything that's been nominated for Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And we'll do that again this year. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I've seen very few of them already.
Right.
They come out later and later in the year. Anyway... let's see here. One last question. We got one from Miku. Wants to know if I could collaborate more on my Moana thoughts. Have we discussed Moana on this podcast? I don't think we have. I was pretty shrug on the story of Moana, but it was pretty, and it had a few good songs. And that's how I felt.
Pretty.
A lot of people really, really loved it, and that's cool, but I thought the story was pretty shrug.
It felt like, so it's really, really beautiful.
It's beautiful. Like, I kind of want to see it in, like, crazy laser 3D just because it's so pretty, you know?
Yeah, it's a gorgeous movie, and I appreciate that the aesthetic is different, and the bones of the plot are kind of different. But in execution, it is Rootsville.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Hyper-competent girl becomes hyper-competent leader.
Yeah. And
what a struggle. And she has the entire ocean helping her the whole way.
Yeah.
Why couldn't the ocean just douse the lava monster? She has the entire fucking ocean on her side. There's a lava monster. Because the ocean could just douse it.
Because the Chosen One had to hand give it back to them. Because
do you know why? Because otherwise there wouldn't be a fucking story. Because you wrote the sidekick character to be the entire ocean.
Yes.
There's no stakes.
I mean, there. Yeah.
That's like the Revenant. That movie never. That would be like the Revenant, except the entire forest is alive and helps Leonardo DiCaprio the whole time. Like. I'm hungry. Here's an apple.
Imagine Leonardo DiCaprio's ridiculous acting with it.
I'm going to throw a sandwich across this bear's nose, and he's going to follow the sandwich instead of mauling you to death.
And like a tree gives him a rabbit or whatever, like something silly. But I mean, like, yeah, there's nothing in the movie that's like bad. It's not like, yeah.
It's a good movie. I enjoyed it. I liked it.
There's nothing wrong with Moana. It's not like there's anything bad. It just felt like it was made by a Mad Libs Disney printout, like coming off of
the Disney Frozen, the Disney Scriptatron.
Yes, Disney Scriptatron. And I think coming off of, I mean, that movie apparently had story problems, like every Busker and Clements thing goes through story problems and 1,000 revisions. And it doesn't surprise me because it came out the other side like here is the plot beats for a very basic family movie, and here the jokes are jokes written by like a network sitcom that gets canceled after one season, kind of
also
catchphrases. it was just this very hollow, like this was made by a computer, but like there's nothing bad about it. It's just this very, very default like movie. It just doesn't have any unique flavor to it.
Yeah. 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 I don't know, man. I kind of want to see it again. I kind of want to see it again.
I feel like it got absolutely.
Well, I'm not going to take you.
I feel like I got absolutely everything out of it in one viewing, which is not how I felt about Frozen or Zootopia. Both Frozen and Zootopia, like, I've rewatched and rewatched and gotten more out of it, and it had, like, a uniqueness to it and a novelty to it. And, yeah, Moana was just like, am I watching a really, really beautiful Illumination movie? Like, it was just...
Oh, that's low blow.
It's a low blow.
It was not an Illumination. It was better
competent
than that.
It's a little more competent than that, yeah. But it has the same, like,
it was way... Come on.
Okay.
That's a step too far.
How about, like, a Tinkerbell movie?
See, you liked, all of Westworld more than I did. Uh-huh. And I liked Moana more than you did.
Yep. We have different tastes. But
it's almost like we're two different people.
Yeah. I didn't dislike
sometimes, Jacob, it feels like we're two different people.
You're right. Illumination wasn't fair. It feels like one of the direct-to-video, like the really well-handled direct-to-video kids Disney movies. Because it has a Disney flavor, but it just doesn't have any distinguishing characteristics. Anyway, besides inside.
You'll keep going, and like as you go, your criticisms get harsher.
I can't help it.
Eventually it'll get all the way to like, and it just didn't have anything good at all. But I didn't dislike it. But it was good. It just irritated the shit out of me, and I hated every minute of it.
No,
it didn't. But it was okay. It was fine.
I did not like or dislike it. It was just this is a family movie that exists. That was my feelings on it.
All right, guys. Okay, I think that actually wraps us up for right now. We had a great time doing this with the video on. We'll definitely do it every time there's a live show from now on out. So thanks to everybody in the live chat for showing up, and we'll see you all soon. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to the crowd for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or a review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.